Hank Rubicek. Have a good evening.
Intoxicating beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 8 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, only here on listener-sponsored KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Warren Holloman, and alongside the talented team of Hank Rubicek, Greg Aldell, Mary Edgerton, engineer and media maven Tatiana Gago, and outstanding guest hosts, Eric Keene, Christy Gorman, and Harwood Taylor. We celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who engage us with stirring personal stories, treasured folk tales, and riveting historical remembrances. Each week we take you on captivating journeys, and then we bring you safely home. Tonight's journeys will take you to Central America, to Mexico, and to Casa Juan Diego, Houston's Catholic worker house of hospitality. You'll hear stories of refugees, border crossings, and persons of faith who have dedicated their lives to caring for strangers knocking at our door. But before we get to the stories, I'd like to ask you for a favor. Tonight, we're nearing the end of KPFT's Fall Fund Drive, and we need you to show the station that you support So What's Your Story. It's easy. Call 713-526-5738 or go online at www.kpft.org, then to donations and scroll down to So What's Your Story as the program you wish to support. The best time to call is right now. It only takes 90 seconds and you won't miss a single story. Hank and Greg are standing by in Pledge Central and they will love to hear from you. Hank?
I'm right here, Warren. How are you? It's so crowded in there that I thought I'd do our first pitch.
Yeah.
From the coziness of sitting right next to Tatiana. You're absolutely right. It only takes 90 seconds to call. As a matter of fact, it takes 90.1 seconds to be exact. For us to call 713-526-5738, jam KPFT to make sure that we know that you want us to stay alive, live storytelling here in Houston, Texas. You know, when our show started in 2008, it began as an open journal. And I was doing this the last Friday of every month. And people loved it. They called in and they said, hey, you know what? We want this every week. So Ernesto Aguilar gave us an opportunity to do this show every week. Started off doing it at 6 a.m. on Monday, you know, the drive into work hour from Katie. And it worked very well. But we've really worked our way up to a great coveted hour. Right now, it is Thursday. 8 o'clock, we are sandwiched between two great shows, Wally James and the Progressive Forum, before us, which is a Houston institution in itself, and Lars and the Tennyson Tape Deck following us. And we are here because we do a good job. This is the only radio station that originated in Houston, Texas. We are the seed of storytelling. The Moth and other sorts of things followed us. We started it all, and we're really proud of it. But we don't want people to call in, or tune in, I should say, and hear silence. That wouldn't be good. We want them to hear the great stories that they hear every week, and we can make sure that that keeps happening if they give us a call at 713-526-5738. Gregor is out there, our steadfast volunteer, and he can take your call and your donations right now. Or if you're not a phone person, go online to www.kpft.org, go to donation, then select your form of payment, and then, this is important, scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you wish to represent as one of your favorites, and we will love you for life. Sorry to take the time, Warren, but I appreciate it, and hopefully we'll have people to thank a little bit later. As a matter of fact, we don't have to wait till later. Right now, I want to thank Paul and Liz for their generous donation. Paul and Liz are off to a great start.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Liz. That's wonderful. That is a good start. Hank, thank you, and thank you, and thanks, Greg. Thanks to Greg for coming in and answering the phone for
us. You're welcome. A little tumultuous out there, but I'll be going out, and hopefully the phones will be ringing for us.
Well, we'll check back with you a little later on.
Great.
And now some stories. As Texans, we're acutely aware of the plight of Central American and Mexican refugees seeking asylum at our border. We hear about families ripped apart, children separated from their parents, parents separated from each other. We hear about them, but we rarely hear their actual stories because, frankly, it isn't always safe for them to speak. Tonight's storytelling guests have been listening to these stories, well, I was thinking for years, but actually decades. And they're going to share a few with you tonight. Dawn McCarty and Susan Gallagher, welcome to So What's Your Story?
So great to be here, Warren. Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you, Susan.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks, Dawn. Well, Susan, you've been on the show before wearing one of your other hats as an expert on Celtic or Irish stories, and we're going to have you back this spring, in fact, for a special show of Celtic stories. But Dawn, since you're the newbie here, we'll start with you. Dr. Dawn McCarty is a professor of social work at U of H downtown. But when I think of her, what comes to mind is that axiom about practicing what you preach, or perhaps for her, teach. Because from Monday to Thursday, Dawn applies her social work skills at Casa Juan Diego, a house of hospitality for refugees. She doesn't just show up and volunteer for a couple of hours. She actually lives there. Dawn, what is it like to live in these two different worlds, academia and a homeless shelter?
It really is a constant opportunity to practice humility in both settings. One place, I'm a professional, a person of importance, if you will. I have a title. People defer to me. I'm the director of my program. Mm-hmm. And at Casa Juan Diego, while I'm doing work, I'm doing important work with families, social work practice with families, I'm also washing dishes or plunging out the toilet. So it's a different experience, but they complement each other beautifully.
It's service. You recently published a textbook on social work among immigrant populations, and your book featured several case studies. I read about it in the feature in the Houston Chronicle. These were essentially stories of immigrants and refugees. Is there a story you could share with us that sort of represents these case studies?
Oh, sure. In the book, I chose stories purposefully that represent many stories that we hear that help us understand the experiences of large groups of people that come to Houston, come to our city. So one story is about a family. A mom with three small children came about Christmas time 9 years ago to Casa Juan Diego. And she had been in an abusive relationship and had fled her abusive husband. He had been arrested. And she came to us traumatized, and her children were traumatized. She was pregnant at the time and delivered her baby prematurely, had been in the hospital, and arrived at Casa Juan Diego after the delivery. So she had two small girls, aged 2 and 3 at the time, and an infant. And it was an opportunity for us at Casa Juan Diego to do what we do best, and that is to receive people that have been traumatized. And so it was really my first opportunity to see how the work that we do heals people in its effort to house and to shelter and to provide a safe place for people that are vulnerable, people on the margins, people that have no place else to go. So this family stayed with us. We had time to care for them, to attend to their medical needs, to attend to their counseling needs, to the children's need for safety. And slowly but surely, as what happens with many families that stay with us and many adults that stay with us, the care and concern and solidarity that we provide in the community of Casa Juan Diego starts to heal you and allows you to move forward. And that's always what we're looking for. And so we, while people are with us, we try to attend to all these needs that they have, but also to their immigration issues and needs. And so we work with attorneys, with volunteer attorneys, with organizations like Catholic Charities and the YMCA that help us work with families to address their immigration legal needs. So this family, this mom, was eligible to apply for a visa as a crime victim. It was a terrible crime what happened to her, and she received her visa, and so she was able to, at that point, transition out of Casa Juan Diego and move into a place where she could care for herself and her children on her own, and really move forward with what she could do to care for her children. This is a common thing we see, particularly with women who are vulnerable to abusive relationships and what can happen to them and where they have limited opportunities to really survive. And so that scenario plays itself out over and over again at Casa Juan Diego. We transitioned many years ago into a place of refuge for women who are battered or trafficked. Mm-hmm. And so we see this scenario come open many times, really every week almost. We'll have a family that we receive in this situation, and we provide that environment that's healing, that is trauma informed, that helps people to heal, and helps the volunteers at Casa Juan Diego to be in solidarity and to heal right along with the families that we receive.
So by providing, I guess, a safe space, that enables time to help bring about the healing?
Absolutely. That's really the first step. You have to feel safe. Uh-huh. The human brain, the human heart, the human spirit has to have and feel safe in order to do what we need to do. And so particularly as parents. And so we are so grateful to have Casa Juan Diego to be able to provide that for so many families. I'm so grateful to the founders, Mark and Louise Zwick, we'll talk about later.
Well, so I imagine the stories of refugees that you work with have a lot of common themes, and clearly suffering from trauma is one of those themes. But I also imagine each story has unique features. So just to give our listeners a broader feel, could you tell us another refugee story?
Oh, sure. We work a lot with dreamers, and dreamers are young people that were brought to the United States by their parents or caregivers or family members when they were children. So they are not authorized to be here, but they are for all purposes have grown up in this country and are American to their core. And so they are in a very difficult position. Many people understand the issue of the legal issue about being a dreamer and the legislative history and the many, many attempts, past and present, and will be again in the future, to address their needs through the DREAM Act. So we have many young people that we work with in this situation. One young person was with my first interaction with dreamers, and we have, of course, many dreamers on our campus, which I work closely with and work hard to support. So this young woman came with her parents. Actually, her parents came first. Her father was injured in a car accident and became paralyzed. Her mother came. He was here as a day laborer in the mid-90s. Her mother was allowed to come down, essentially, on a short-term visa to care for him. But that type of trauma, spinal cord injury, and requires a lot of care, and learned very early on they could not go back to their country of origin. He needed too much care. So they had this young woman, in the book, her story, I call her Elena, the dreamer. And so she came with her parents. It came down. Her parents sent for her when she was 9 and grew up in this country. And I first met her when she was graduating high school. Her father, who was wheelchair bound, he's a quadriplegic, came to Casa Juan Diego because he and his wife had lived at Casa Juan Diego after his injury for quite some time while he recuperated, and wanted to talk about his daughter. She graduated the top of her class of a large high school, did very well, but couldn't get into college, couldn't get a scholarship because she was not documented, and he was heartbroken. So we worked together. I worked with him and with Elena, and she was so bright. She did all the work, but we found her a scholarship in a STEM field, which was her dream to become a doctor. And she went to college and did well, and I worked with her throughout her college career, and now she's getting married next month to a lovely, lovely young man, and we're so proud of her. And she became an advocate in college for dreamers and voluntarily outed herself as an undocumented mm-hmm. person using the dreamer slogan, undocumented and unafraid. And so we're so proud of her. We're so proud of the support we've been able to provide to her, but mainly just so proud of her resilience and the resilience of all dreamers that we meet at Casa Juan Diego.
Wow, that's a very inspiring story. And it must feel rewarding to see how that work has paid off for her, the hard work she did.
Exactly. She's amazing. Every dreamer I work with is amazing. To be in that situation where it seems like you have no path forward, you just make a path. And these are certainly young people we want.
There are a lot of lessons, I guess, we could take from that story. For you, what is one of the most essential lessons?
We see every day at Casa Juan Diego the power of policy, particularly the power of bad policy, the power of bad regulations and rules that make no sense and hurt people unnecessarily. And so, particularly with dreamers, really with so many other situations that we see every day, such small policy changes could alleviate so much suffering, so much suffering. And we have that message to bring about, that folks think that this process and immigration is so complicated, but it really isn't. It really isn't.
I know that part of your spiritual motivation is humility, and neither you nor Susan like to be complimented too much. But I do find, just as the young lady's story you just described was inspiring, yours is as well. And I'll tell our listeners, at the end of the show, we're going to come full circle and you're going to tell your story. But what I see is a synergy between your academic expertise and your clinical training as a social worker. You're putting that into practice. But I also see a spiritual synergy, a religious vocation of feeling a calling to serve the poor. And the way that comes together for both you and Susan is very inspiring. And we'll have a lot more to say about that in the third segment of the show. But for now, if you're just joining us, you're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT Houston. You can catch us at 89.5 in Galveston and 91.9 in Huntsville. We're in the final week of the Fall Fun Drive, and Hank and Greg are in Pledge Central, and they're taking your calls. Hank?
Hi, Warren. Great stories. Very, very wonderful stories. And these are the sorts of stories that we're paying for, folks. You know, when you listen in, and you never get a bad show on So What's Your Story. You really don't get a bad show on any program on the eclectic programming guide here at KPFT. But, you know, you don't call in, you don't listen in and say, you know what, they're not getting paid, so what do you expect from them? Because you expect excellence, right? And we get excellence every week with fabulous, fabulous storytellers. You know, KPFT really is an icon for community storytelling. We are the icon for community radio. We bring Houstonians in from all walks of life. They share their narratives. Sometimes we cry and sometimes we laugh. We listen to a plethora of trajectories. We listen to every conceivable kind of episode that people experience. You know, we are born as a blank page. And every week we write chapters. We write segments of people's lives by listening to them. We allow to get into these storytellers' souls by going through their windows of magic with the stories that they tell. 713-526-5738. You know, in 1970, the KKK tried to shut us up by bombing the station. But this is listener sponsorship. We are the ones who fuel peace. We're not obligated by any corporations. Our station is based exclusively on freedom of expression. And expression isn't just important here at KPFT, it is everything. So with your help, we can keep that alive. 713-526-5738, JAM KPFT. Greg is waiting for your call, and we'd love to hear from you. Thank you, Warren.
You're very welcome. And once again, a big thank you to you and Greg for coming in and taking the calls. As Hank says, we are 100% listener-sponsored. We don't get money from any other sources. So if you don't support us, we go off the air. It's that simple. So we do appreciate any support you can give. Well, one of the things that has struck me tonight about our storytellers, of course, is their dedication to helping immigrants and refugees who come to our country. And I mentioned that Dawn does this remarkable thing. She's a full-time professor at U of H downtown, but she also lives at Casa Juan Diego in a homeless shelter Monday through Thursday. Well, speaking of dedication, our other guest, Susan Gallagher, has been volunteering at Casa Juan Diego since, well, before some of our listeners were born. Susan, what type of work do you do at Casa Juan Diego?
I mainly work on the newspaper that we publish called Houston Catholic Worker, which is a bilingual paper in English and Spanish. And the paper is really important to us because it keeps us connected to the community, to our allies, to the immigrants we serve. And we try to use it to explore the intellectual and spiritual underpinnings of our work.
Well, that news, for those not familiar with the Catholic Worker movement, that's a big part of the Catholic Worker identity and mission, I guess, is to, and you'll say more about that in your first story, I think.
I will.
But just stay tuned, because it's not just a newsletter by any means. It's a very important newspaper that Susan publishes. Well, you both belong to an amazing religious community, and if our listeners aren't familiar with it, I'll say the name again. It's called Casa Juan Diego. But in a little while, you're going to tell the story of the Casa Juan Diego community. But first, I ask you to go back in time a little bit and tell a story about what was served as the inspiration for Casa Juan Diego. Could you tell our listeners the story of Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker Movement?
The Catholic Worker Movement began in New York City in 1933 when Dorothy Day and Peter Morin published the first issue of a newspaper that they called The Catholic Worker. That same year, Dorothy began a house of hospitality to welcome the homeless, the hungry, the exiled and abandoned, to welcome each guest as Jesus in disguise. Today, there are over 100 autonomous Catholic worker communities throughout the U.S. and abroad that continue to practice the works of mercy. Catholic workers are lay people, independent of the institutional church. Their daily labor is to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, welcome the stranger, and care for the sick. They embrace pacifism and voluntary poverty. Catholic workers do not receive any salary. They live side by side with the people they serve and give their work as a gift. Many Catholic workers also publish newspapers to describe their work and explain their vision for a more just and compassionate world. And all of this was inspired by Dorothy Day's example, but it was not at all obvious at first that this was the path her life would take.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy was born in 1897, and she was a journalist and social activist. In 1917, she was arrested for protesting in favor of women's suffrage. And she lived a rather bohemian life in Greenwich Village in New York City, where she was friends with the playwright Eugene O'Neill, for instance. And she wrote for publications like The Masses and The Call. And she once interviewed Leon Trotsky. She also worked briefly as a screenwriter in Hollywood. But Dorothy was also drawn to spirituality. In the 1920s, with earnings from her writing, she bought a small cabin on Staten Island, which she used as a retreat for writing and reflection. And she began to attend Mass and to explore the Catholic faith. Now, at this time, she had begun a romantic relationship with a man named Forster Batterham, and he was a biologist and also an anarchist. And when Dorothy found that she was pregnant, she felt an urgent need to have her child baptized. But Forster was horrified. He was opposed to organized religion, and he was dismayed at its increasing importance to Dorothy. But nevertheless, Dorothy became a Catholic in 1927, and with great sorrow, left Forster. She had her daughter Tamar baptized, and she continued to support herself as a writer, and she became convinced that the social justice teachings of the Church, if they were truly implemented, were the best way to address the social concerns that had long been her preoccupation. In 1932, Dorothy met Peter Morin. At that time, in the midst of the Depression, Peter Morin was a rather shabby-looking French immigrant in his 50s who was sometimes mistaken for a vagrant. But he was also a widely read intellectual, a theologian, and a social activist who guided Dorothy's reading and profoundly influenced her thought. Dorothy credited him as the true founder of the Catholic worker movement. Peter had a talent for presenting complex ideas in a simple, short format that he called easy essays. Like Dorothy, he was a pacifist and embraced voluntary poverty. He also envisioned establishing sustainable farming communities, which he called agronomic universities, where daily life would include reading, study, crafts, and farming. He wrote that we should try to make a world where it would be easier for people to be good. Both Dorothy and Peter spent the rest of their lives as Catholic workers. Peter died in 1949 at Mary Farm near Newburgh, New York, and Dorothy continued to do the works of mercy and to edit the newspaper until her death in 1980. All her life, she opposed every form of violence, advocated for the poor and marginalized, and affirmed the work of hospitality. Father Daniel Berrigan said of her that Dorothy Day lived as though the truth were true. Dorothy always remembered that Jesus said, "What you do for the least of the brethren, you do for me." This continues to be the foundation of the work of all Catholic workers, who know that every guest that comes to them is really Jesus in disguise.
So is Dorothy Day considered a saint by the Catholic Church?
Not yet, no. But no. Her cause for canonization has begun and is currently under consideration. But interestingly, Dorothy didn't like it when people called her a saint. She said that just gives them an excuse because she thought you don't need to be a saint to live the way she did.
There's a poster I've seen. I'm sure you've seen it. She's smoking a cigarette and looking very worldly, and she says, "I'm not a saint. Don't call me a saint." There's another one I'm sure you're familiar with. She says, "You help the poor, and they say you're a saint. You ask, why are they poor, and they call you a communist."
Yes, that's true. I remember that quote.
Well, on this show, I've been working with Hank now for a few years and listening before that. We tend to focus on two types of stories in particular that I love. Personal stories, those are stories I tend to tell, and then traditional or folk tales. And those are the types of stories you tell, such mm-hmm. as the Celtic tales. But what you've just told us, I think, is another category of stories. I would call it a historical story. It honors and remembers those ordinary people who've done extraordinary things, like Dorothy Day and Peter Morin, and also extraordinary communities like the Catholic Worker community, a community that really doesn't like to talk about what it does. But I think people need to hear what they're doing, and so that's why I really appreciated that story. Here in Houston, we have our own Dorothy Day and Peter Morin. In Mark and Louise Zwick. Could you tell our listeners the story of our Houston Dorothy Day and Peter Morin?
With pleasure. Casa Juan Diego is a Catholic Worker house of hospitality that serves migrants and refugees here in Houston. It began 39 years ago because of Mark and Louise Zwick, as you've said, and because of their remarkable example of servant leadership. Mark died in 2016, and Louise continues to lead the work of the house. But tonight, I'd like to tell you about Mark. He was born in Ohio in 1927, one of 11 children. He and one of his brothers were high school football stars, frequently mentioned in the newspaper as the Zwick Boys. Mark was even offered a football scholarship to college, but in the end, he took a different path. I first met Mark in 1980 when he was working at St. Teresa's Church here in Houston. By that time, he had earned his MSW and had achieved a respected position doing social work in California. He and Louise had also spent time working in El Salvador, but when the political situation became too dangerous for their two young children, they returned to the U.S. When they came back from Central America, Mark would say, "If we had any guts, we would start a Catholic Worker house." Mm-hmm. Well, Mark had a lot of guts. Mm. And he left his job and rented a dilapidated building on Washington Avenue and started the work of hospitality. Imagine the courage to give up a salary and become literally poor. To accept the vulnerability of depending on donated food and clothes, just like the people he served. Mark had guts, and Mark was tough. It's a funny thing to say about such a gentle man, but the demands of the work were enormous, and he had the endurance to do it day in and day out, cheerfully. If you said to Mark, "Don't you ever feel sad or angry?" he would say, "We don't have time. Mostly we just feel a little tired." When we talk about the works of mercy that Mark and Louise have done, it's easy to start reciting statistics. 100,000 nights of shelter for the homeless, for refugees, for those fleeing violence, both political and domestic. 10 to 15 tons of food and clothing distributed each week.
Each week.
500 families receive food from Casa Juan Diego each week, in addition to those who live at Casa Juan Diego.
Wow.
They funded a hiring hall. They provide medical care and assistance to the long-term disabled. The scale and scope of the work are hard to imagine. But it's not just the magnitude of the work that matters. It's the way they do it. I think part of the reason Mark was able to do so much was that he prayed, and then he just got on with it, step by step, day after day, year after year, decade after decade. Mark and Louise say they never had a 5-year plan. They just saw a need and did what they could. Mark also had a great sense of humor. Who was it that said a Christian has a profound duty of joy? I've always thought that Mark's humor was rooted in that foundational sense of joy. If you asked him, "How are you doing, Mark?" he would often answer, "Oh, better than I deserve." And he wasn't being ironic. That's how he felt. Mark also modeled the Catholic workers' commitment to pacifism. Sometimes people came to Casa Juan Diego angry. Maybe they were drunk. Maybe they were demanding to see one of the battered women that found shelter there. And when somebody like that came and started to raise a ruckus, instead of calling the police, Mark would go out and talk with them and find a way to defuse the situation. Mark was a gentle person, but the full force of his moral authority came to the forefront at times like these. Don Marcos could and did command respect. Of course, Mark never wanted to be in the spotlight, and he often used humor to deflect attention. Once, after Mark won the prestigious Jefferson Award for Community Service, a local news station wanted to do a feature on him. Mark agreed, provided the focus was on the work of the house rather than on Mark himself. Nevertheless, with the cameras rolling, the reporter extended the microphone and asked, "What makes a person give up everything and dedicate himself to the service of the poor?" Mark just shrugged and said, "Beats me." I believe that Mark saw Casa Juan Diego not just as his work alone, but as the work of a community. And if Mark was the cornerstone, then Louise completed the foundation. Their marriage was a remarkable collaboration. In raising their family, in their daily works of mercy, and in their various writing projects. In the early days of Casa Juan Diego, Louise supported the family with her work as a librarian, because as a Catholic worker, of course, Mark received no salary. And later, when the kids were grown, Louise, too, became a full-time staff member and co-director of Casa Juan Diego. After Mark died, I kept thinking of the words of the Chilean poet Pablo Neruda. "If I die, I don't want your laughter or your steps to waver. I don't want my heritage of joy to die. Don't call up my person. I am absent. Live in my absence as in a house. Vive en mi ausencia como en una casa. Live in my absence as in a house." How many thousands literally have lived and will live in the house, the casa, Mark created? And all of us who knew him live on in a spiritual space he has left, one which is enlivened by the Spirit and echoing with Mark's patient faithfulness, prayerful commitment, and profound joy.
Thank you for that story.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
In your tradition, I remember from school a long time ago, there's some category of story, I think it's called a hagiography.
Indeed it is.
Could you, in a nutshell, tell us what that is?
The story of a saint and of the journey that made a person a saint.
Yeah.
The capsule with which we commemorate them and their charism, their special gifts.
Yeah. So the type of story you've told us is, in a sense, a hagiography. Is that fair?
You know, I think you're right, although I had never thought of it that way. But yes,
yeah,
I agree.
And it's quite inspiring. If someone is inspired and they would like to volunteer at Casa Juan Diego or help in some way, who should they contact? What should they do?
Well, I would say get on the internet and email to info@cjd.org. Put volunteer in the subject line, and eventually, you may have to wait a little while because we're awfully busy, but we will get back to you.
info@cjd.org,
right.
Casa Juan Diego.
That's right.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Well, Susan and Dawn, we're going to give you a chance to catch your breaths so that Tatiana can share this week's storytelling calendar. Tatiana?
So let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because, you know, it's a great place to learn about the art of storytelling. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month at Temple Emmanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. And the fourth Tuesday is coming up next week. Also, next week on Saturday, October 26th, the Guild hosts one of their storied annual events, Skyline Screamers. You can come and listen to scary stories to put yourself in the Halloween mood. The fun starts at 7 p.m. at Marmion Park at 18th and Heights Boulevard. Cost? Can you say free? And be sure to visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for information about all of their upcoming events, including a workshop on telling your personal story on Saturday, November 9th, facilitated by Dr. Hank and Dr. Michael Winters, longtime friend and supporter of KPFT. Go to the Guild's website for specifics, and while you're on the Guild's page, why not become a member? It's easy to do online. Also, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs, every show since 2008, all listed on the menu under Radio Program. And if you don't own a radio, that's not a problem because you can listen to a stream live on kpft.org and on Facebook Live. And we're also on YouTube. And I guess you can say we are all over the place. And if you have any story suggestions or tell us why you'd be a great guest, drop us a note at story@kpft.org. And I promise we'll get back to you. And finally, don't forget our friends at The Moth. Check out their monthly story slams. They are at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of each month. Next one is November 12th, and the theme is gratitude.
And gratitude is quite appropriate for us tonight because Hank and Greg are taking your calls, and perhaps they have some people to thank.
We do. We have a person named Marcia. Do you know a Marcia?
Marcia
knows you. And we also want to thank Candace, a brand new, not so much brand new listener, but a brand new donor. Thank you so much, Candace.
Thank you,
and
Candace.
And I hear those phones ringing. You know, I wanted to sort of apologize to our listeners tonight because I'm running all over the place, a little fluttered. Excuse the old cliche, but I do feel like a chicken with the head cut off because I'm running all over the place. And we're also watching part of the Astros game. So the concentration's a little off. But I want our listeners to know how hard we work every single week, and that's no hyperbole. We work so hard to put these programs together. And, you know, it also seems like we have a fun drive every other week. I know that. But we can't rely on the other guy. We really need each of you to understand the power of giving. I know that it's hard to donate every time we have a fun drive, but please do your very best to give us a call at 713-526-5738. With whatever you can provide. You know, every week we listen to tellers, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but it's important to know that we've had over 600 stories told since 2008. We've had students, we've had preachers, we've had homeless people. We've had a mother who told the story for the very first time of her daughter's murder in downtown Detroit. We had the attorney on who, along with her students, was responsible for the exoneration of Anthony Graves. We've had comedies and tragedies, losses and jubilation. We have heard every side of the human condition, and we've heard them all through the soul of the human voice. Every story takes us on a journey in which we are taken before returning safely to the present. Several months ago, a good friend of mine died. His name was Michael Ublein, and I shared a quick story about him on the air, and I'd like to do it again. The day he died, and I didn't know this would be the day he died, but he could hardly speak, and his wife said, "Don't expect him to say anything." And I called him, and we talked, and he said, or she said to me, "He just wants to hear about memory." So I said to him, thinking that he couldn't respond, I said, "Mike, I was looking at our kindergarten picture, you know, with Miss Bradford. I don't know if you remember, Mike, but I peed in my pants the first day." Now, I've known this man for 62 years before he passed. We've communicated at least every 3 months for over 60 years. Mm. Now, I was told he couldn't say a word, but I said that to him, and he said, "I know, I remember, and you embarrassed the hell out of me. I try to let people think that we weren't friends, but it was too late." And then he laughed. And then I remember he didn't say anything else, and I said, Mike, when it's the right time and you're someplace where you need to be, let me know that you're okay. And that was it. I hung up, and then 4 hours later, his wife, Randy, calls me and said he died. And he died moments after he was laughing with me. Now, there isn't any other way for me to explain the power of story other than to share that story with everyone who's listening. Because that is what you're paying for, you know. It's not about stories. It's about an episode in person, in a person's life, that makes not only an indelible impression, but becomes transformative to us all. And I believe that the message that he told me he would give me to let me know that he's okay is the incentive for me to tell that story to all of you tonight. Give us a call at 713-526-5738, JAMKPFT, or please get online at www.kpft.org. Go to donations, let us know how you want to pay, and then please scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you know is significant in your life. Now, I know that our guests would like to maybe make a few words about the power of this stuff as well. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, we're glad to have the opportunity, Hank, and I have to say I completely agree with you that stories have the power to heal, enlighten, and transform. The stories we hear on this show help us understand ourselves and our shared human journey a little better. They leave us changed. And I hope everyone will support Pacifica and this program to keep storytelling on the air.
So much, Kathy. It means a lot. And you're a longtime supporter and friend, and we appreciate
that. Susan.
That's right.
Yes, and stories are the way we communicate the human condition. Nothing's more important, really, in these difficult times, both at Casa Juan Diego and in the world.
Thank you. In the first segment of the show, Dawn, you told stories of immigrants and refugees. And you really told stories that oftentimes the subject of the story would not have felt safe telling themselves. So that made the stories doubly important, I think. In the second segment, Susan, you told us the stories of the Catholic worker movement in Casa Juan Diego, Houston's house of hospitality for immigrants and refugees. In the third and final segment, I'm going to ask you to get personal. Dawn, could you tell us your own story of how you became involved at Casa Juan Diego? I first heard this story also in a second article I read about you in the Houston Chronicle, and I think our listeners would enjoy it as well.
Well, living on the Gulf Coast, most people can relate to the damage that hurricanes can wreak havoc on people's lives. So in 2008, my husband and I were living on the Bolivar Peninsula. And in late summer, Hurricane Ike washed away our house and everything we own. And we really were not prepared for that, as most people would not be. We had evacuated, of course. That's why we're still here. But we didn't take anything with us. We had some kind of idea that we'd be back shortly and just really took a few days' worth of clothing and went to a family member's house. And so for the next few weeks, we had to figure out what we were going to do and how we were going to recover. So somewhere, I'm not sure where or at what point exactly, I had known about the Catholic Worker, and I was already doing some volunteer work there one day a week. My research is on immigration from Mexico and Central America, and we had spent several years before much of that time in Mexico doing research. And my work at Casa Juan Diego was really an opportunity for me to start expressing gratitude for all the people that helped me and all the families I interviewed and lived with and worked with me in Mexico to help me understand what happens to their communities when people migrate. So at some point, Again, I'm not sure when or exactly when it happened. The community of Casa Juan Diego became a beacon. And we talked to Mark and Louise and about coming to live at Casa and being in service full time. And they were happy to have us and welcomed us just like every other person they welcome. So it was a gift. It was a great mm-hmm. gift, and for which I'm too grateful for words, really.
I remember vividly the photographs of Bolivar Peninsula taken in the days after Hurricane Ike, and there would be a space that had 100 or 200 houses, and mm-hmm. now there were one or two left.
Yeah, it wasn't just your house, it was your whole community that was destroyed, so we lost our whole community. So, you know, finding another community was such a blessing and such a miracle for us in a way that was so meaningful. And having, staying in the community has been really a remarkable experience for both of us.
Could you say more about how it felt to be, I guess, homeless after the hurricane, and then what it felt like to find a new community and a new home?
Oh, sure, and it was. It took a minute for us to realize we were homeless. We were living with family. Of course, we weren't without resources. We had plenty mm-hmm. of resources. We could recover. Like, many of the people in our community had no path to recovery, and mm-hmm. so that caused a significant amount of grief. But we did. But these are the moments when you can really make a difference. You can really change your life if you want to, and we thought this is a sign. This is a sign from wherever, an opportunity to do something different, to become a vessel, to become a person of service in a way that was not just a day a week or part-time, but to really delve in, to follow Mark and Louise's example of how this can be an opportunity for your own spiritual development. And it certainly was. It felt like this was home from the very beginning, and it still feels like home.
What, if I may ask, this is a very personal question, but what inspired you to do this, and what inspires you to continue?
Really, I knew about Dorothy Day. I learned about her in college, mm-hmm. and I was amazed by her, about mm-hmm. her ability to use one life to make such a dramatic impact on so much and so mm-hmm. many. And who gets a chance to do that? And here we were with this opportunity to make our lives about other people, not about ourselves. That's really such a path to unhappiness. And here was our chance. That's really what I'm so grateful to Mark and Louise about as well, is the opportunity that they've provided to so many other people in our tradition, to live out the works of mercy. You don't get this opportunity in this way, in such a meaningful way. And most people never have this opportunity. And so I'm so grateful for that, and so grateful for every day I get to wake up very tired, very worried about a lot of different people, but very much not worried about myself, worried about others. And that creates its own kind of beauty and own kind of happiness.
One last question. What's the hardest thing about this new life that you live?
I have to tell you, I'm completely, and everyone who knows me, I'm completely overdone. I'm overbooked. I'm over everything. And it's a struggle. It really is a struggle. But here's also where I am the luckiest person in the world. I get to, in one part of my life, use these great gifts I've learned, and great gifts of education I use and practice with people to help other people, to serve other people in one setting at Casa Juan Diego. And then I get to go to another setting at the university, where I get to prepare all these young minds, all these eager people, eager to make a difference in the community and help form them and help launch them I called in my army for good. So that's the great opportunity that I have. So it's hard to think, it's hard to feel in any way or think any way that that's not a good thing.
Yeah. Thank you, Dawn. And Susan, just in a nutshell, I think we've got 30 seconds here. What inspired you to do this work, and what inspires you to continue to be a part of this amazing community?
Well, like Dawn, I was happy to have an opportunity to use my skills. So mm-hmm. when I learned a Catholic Worker House was opening, I thought maybe there'd be a newspaper, and there was. Uh-huh. So that was fun. I have to say that although there's a lot of struggle associated with the work, it's also fun. I mean, there's a great welcome when you go to Casa Juan Diego. The other Catholic workers, the volunteers, the guests, it's a warm place, and it's a respite from some of the struggles. So it reinforces itself when you're part of the community.
And what's the hardest thing?
The people you can't help, the problems you can't solve. Yeah.
Maybe the policies that Dawn talked about.
Well, certainly it does seem sometimes that we're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, just for me, and I'm sure our listeners will agree, these stories tonight and your lives, which are a story, have been so inspiring. And they're the types of stories that we bring our listeners every Thursday night on So What's Your Story? I feel like, in a way, I have a chance to witness the history of Houston being told each week through the stories that people tell.
Okay.
Houstonians come and say what they're doing, just as you've done tonight. Let's check. We've got just a little bit more time. I'd like to check back in with Hank if he's got a final report. I think he's grabbing the other microphone. We're in three different studios, so we're kind of running around here. I don't know if he can hear me. Hank, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Now we
okay,
can.
Great. Okay, good. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Springer must have
just hit a home run.
We have had some calls come in. I didn't know if they were for us, so I was kind of running around. I'm sorry, but they are not. But there are still plenty of time to call in. 90.1 seconds. That's all it takes. 713-526-5738. I just want to remind our listeners, this is not the last week of our fund drive. It is continuing for another week. Mary will be here next week, and she'll be doing some pitches as well. I'll be with her. And then the week after that is Halloween. Mm-hmm. Be here, because it will be very, very frightening, extremely frightening. Mm-hmm. How frightening, I can't tell you, possibly, because I don't know, but it will be. But we do know that we have another week left for the fund drive. Please give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love your donations. We'd love to hear your messages. We'll be happy to thank you on air, unless you tell us otherwise. 713-526-5738. You can call after the show or get online. Just make sure that you scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you wish to support. Thank you so much. Another great show. Thank you, Warren. Thank you, ladies.
And
fabulous.
Tatiana, Hank, Greg, thank you back your way as well. And Susan and Dawn and all those who serve at Casa Juan Diego, because I feel you're representing them as well. Thank you for making Houston, and I feel the whole world, because the world has come to your door, a better place. And thank you for being on So What's Your Story.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for your hospitality,
yes.
Warren.
And I hope you'll come back again and we'll share more stories.
Sure.
We've already been brainstorming some other stories that need to be told. So next week, as Hank said, Mary is hosting. Her guest will be Rich Johnston, telling stories about collecting things. Not hoarding, just collecting, or at least that's what he says. What's in your attic? As for this week's show, thanks so much for listening. Tatiana is going to take us off the air with a song I like and relates very closely to the theme of this show, Deportees, a Woody Guthrie song sung by Joan Baez. Meanwhile, don't touch that dial, because Lars and the Tennyson Tape Deck is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story. and treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories. We'll keep bringing them to you. This is Warren, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.